Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have a very special guest, and I'm extremely excited for this interview because for months I've been trying to solve two of the most salacious rumors from the cat's rumor mill, and today I think we will find out the true answers. So he starred as Rum Tug Tugger in the 2016 Broadway revival of Cats. Welcome, Tyler Haynes, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'll give us some time before we get into that, but I want to start with your history of Cats. So before you became the infamous Rum Tug Tugger. I call him just Tugger. It's such every single name is a mouthful.
Yeah.
And so the only one I really wanted to keep was I wanted to call Busfer Jones Busfer Rhymes the whole time.
How inappropriate can I be?
As much as you want.
Okay, because we called him Butt Stuffer Jones.
Okay.
So it's going to be that kind of podcast today.
I'm excited. So before you took on, what did you have a nickname for Tugger?
Oh, it's just Tugger.
Just Tugger.
It's just Tugger. Yeah.
That's enough already.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, come on. It says so much.
Okay. So how much, have you seen the show before you became Tugger? Was there, you know, a childhood moment where you saw it, or what's your history with the show?
Yeah. So I, growing up, the cat eyes I saw everywhere. I was very familiar with the song memory, and then I saw the original Broadway production, not the original cast, but I saw it back in 98. A girl from my high school, Meg Guillentine, was Cassandra, so we were up here on a school trip. I saw it, and I did not love it, but I think it was because it had been built up my whole life, and then I was just like, this is just a big ballet with cats. Then I saw it again a couple years later, hoping that I would enjoy it more and trying to find more in it. And I didn't find much more in it. And then I was cast in the show and then immediately drank the Kool-Aid and fell in love with it. I mean, like, I got roped in the minute Jillian Lynn, the first 15 minutes, the only 15 minutes she spent with us, we had to roll around each other and grind on each other and get to know each other really quickly. And I was like, this show is for me.
Yeah.
And then Trevor Nunn just like told us the origin, and I was hooked and I loved it. I loved doing it. I loved being a part of it. I've been on both sides of it.
How would you explain the origin? You've had some actual inside information because most people don't know.
Well, what Trevor had told us was, I think Andrew went to him with the idea, or they came up with it together. I know that T.S. Eliot's estate said that they signed off on it as long as they stayed true to the poetry and didn't add anything. I know Grisabella was a lost poem that they found.
That was too scary for children.
Yes.
Which is why they didn't put it in the book.
And then the song Memory, he had that, Andrew Lloyd Webber had that in his, he had been writing that for a while and didn't know where to put it and didn't find the right home for it. And so once they found that, then they married the two and thus gave Cats kind of an anti-hero, I guess.
Yeah.
And then they premiered it, and it was, it became what it is now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That is, okay, that's super interesting. I did not realize that memory was not written directly for it. It was already written.
That's what, I mean, that's what, if I, my memory serves me correctly, that's what they told us on day one, three years ago.
What was your direction for your character? Because your character in 2016 is coming off of the rapping street cat version.
Yeah,
which was a disaster.
It's interesting because when they were auditioning for this revival, everyone thought that they were going to go in that direction, especially once Andy Blankenbuehler signed on, fresh off of Hamilton, and people were like, it's going to be Hamilcats. And there was all these rumors of who was going to be playing Rum Tum Tugger. For me, initially, I didn't even audition for the role. I was up for another role. And then in my final callback, they had me... I didn't know the material, so they just had me sing a rock song of my own, and it was basically because of that, my banter with Trevor Nunn, that got me the job. And my direction, it was hard because with Cats, like I said, Gillian Lynn was only there the first day for a very short period of time, and then she wasn't there anymore. And then Andy, they gave control to Andy, and Andy created something new, and so we didn't have necessarily a show Bible to work off of from previous productions. Chrissy Cartwright, who was Gillian Lynn's associate, she was there on hand to help guide us, but it was really kind of, we got to start fresh with it. And for me, it was hard because I had there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I probably shouldn't say this, but the show is done now. So here it is, y'all. So I had somebody being like, this is who he is. And somebody else being like, no, this is who he is. And I had all these people coming at me with like this idea of who Tugger was. And for me, I didn't grow up on the movie or the show. And it was just, I was kind of like, I didn't have anything to base it off of. So the direction I chose to go with it was Trevor pulled me aside and was like, all right, so I watch you in rehearsals and half the time you're super professional, and the other half the time you're a bratty 5-year-old. So that's who Tugger is. I want you to go with that. And I was like, okay, I can do that. So I started just making a lot of off-the-wall choices. And you know the term where it's like you throw spaghetti in to see if it sticks? I was just throwing spaghetti the whole run. I just tried everything. And there were a lot of people that I studied a lot of Freddie Mercury and Bruno Mars and Prince and Bob Fosse and Herman Munster and like random things, the genie from Aladdin, like all these. I was just nonstop playing throughout the whole run. And that's what made it so fun for me, because I was with it for the whole run. And each show, I just tried something different. And Trevor really encouraged that. And it was the most fun I've ever had.
That's amazing. So I guess did you boot up the VHS and even watch the movie before, or did you just kind of come in and try to create it completely yourself?
Well, I did a couple months before. Sarah Jean Ford, who played Aurel's Jelly Lorum, she's my best friend from college. And when we got cast in the show, I'm just laughing because I just remember when we both found out that we never thought that we'd be in the same show together, because we're just very different performers. We're similar actors, but you know, like, I'm a Chorus Line and she's Christine and Phantom of the Opera. Those worlds don't really combine.
Cats unites all.
So we finally got to do a show together, and we were like, all right, we need to sit down and watch the movie. And within the first 10 minutes, I was like, can we stop now? And she was like, no, we have to watch it. Because I was like, I don't know if I can sit through this. And I have to say, I'm being honest about this because I love this show now. But at that point, I was just like, oh, man. And so we sat through the whole thing. We watched the whole thing.
You endured it, basically.
We endured it. Yeah. And that was the last time I ever watched it. I thought I would watch it again after the show was done, but I just haven't, and I probably won't, because I like the version of Cats that I was in. And a lot of actors will look to that as a source for like as their Bible. And for me, I just tried to stay away from it because John Partridge, who was Rum Tum Tugger in that, did a great job. I just kind of wanted to create my own thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I tend to veer away from the movie.
Absolutely. I do. I watched it one sitting as well. I've seen it one time.
All right.
I have watched a lot of the YouTube clips because that's what it comes from. But the first time I saw it and I saw Mr. Mustafili shooting lightning bolts out of his hands, I was like, why can't we have that in the theater?
Yeah, right.
That was, you know, high effects for the, what, 90s?
That was high budget.
Come on. So I want to talk about your song.
Okay, let's do it.
How many furries do you think you created?
Me, with your Tyler song? Haynes?
Yes.
I don't think I created any.
None?
But I think, no, I think Tugger definitely did. That was the funny thing about what we realized with this show, and this show is such a phenomenon, that the audiences that we had were just, they just had so many different walks of life, and there were different demographics for each character. And I know for me, the thing that I enjoyed the most, and I was never taking it as like, oh, me, Tyler, like I'm making them feel this way. It was the character, because oftentimes I would come out the stage door and people would be disappointed that I wasn't in like leather and chains and whatever. I'd come out in like glasses and be a big old letdown. But whatever, thus is life. But there was, I got a lot of older females, and then I got a lot of like, really? This was surprising, like butch jocks, like that were dads that were like weirdly turned on by my character. So
they wanted to be your character.
Sure. Be in, whatever. There you go. Told you.
So your song, and I think hopefully people have listened to the episode I talked about, your song is overly sexual.
Yeah.
And so in the movie, and this is what I was basing off of, because I did see your performance, but I was so lost the first time I saw it. I mm-hmm. was trying to figure out. I had no context of what it was. I didn't know. I just had free tickets on a preview.
Cool.
And so I remember when yours came out, I was like, oh, this is fun. This is a fun song. But in the movie, there is a lot of crotch thrusts, mm-hmm. and there's a few situations where it looks like it's about to hit a female cat in the face.
Sure.
Did you ever experience that in rehearsal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Come on.
All the time?
Not all the time. It was, like I said, Andy Blankenbuehler reworked that number, and so we didn't do that number. We did not stay true to Gillian Lynn's choreography. And Tyler, me, I am a fan of just a pelvic thrust. And so, like, if Andy didn't put it in the show, I would make sure it was in there. And also, I had, you know, my partner for majority of the show was Christine Cornish-Smith, who you interviewed, who was Bob mm-hmm. Ballerina, who is, so you put the two of us together and it's trouble, because we are both very, our senses of humor tend to lean a little more provocative. And so there was, yes, a lot of pelvic thrusts into probably her head, you know, which was what it was.
I was going to say, keep going.
I mean, if she was here, she could comment on it. But if she didn't already, I don't know. It was fun. I mean, and I'm going to keep talking about Tugger, like in because he is his own thing. And for me, he was his own thing, if that makes any sense. And I loved playing him because there was so much freedom and he's fearless and I just learned a lot. But especially once you put that costume on and with that song and just his entrance alone is just so, you just feel like a freaking rock star. And then being on that stage and having people scream for you and like, how could you not like just like gyrate on some cat's nose? Like, because they're right there and they're wanting it. So you know what? There it was.
That's amazing.
You have to edit any of this out.
No, nothing gets edited. Nothing gets edited. So I do think your character does have an interesting potential family tree when you think about it from that perspective. How would you interpret that?
Well, I had my own interpretation and backstories with each, with different characters in the show. And for me,
I want to hear all of those.
Okay. So they had told us on day one that Monkey Strap and Tugger were brothers and were Deuteronomy's sons.
Yep.
And Monk was the chosen prince and Tugger was the rebel. And so I'm not a big Game of Thrones fan. Andy Huntington Jones was like, oh, we're like Jon Snow and the other guy. I don't know what that reference was, but I really went with the whole Prince William, Prince Harry thing.
Okay.
So that's kind of, I was like, all right. And Andy and I, and I love him. He was great in the show. He's a great guy. But we kind of turned into our characters during rehearsals and previews. He's a little more diligent and consistent, and I'm just kind of can be a hurricane in rehearsals as far as just trying whatever and trying to get a reaction. And we really created a special relationship. So the other element to that family that I had, that there have been like stories out there that I really went with, that was that McCavity was the third brother.
Okay. Third brother.
Yeah. And he was like the middle son.
And then, so that's kind of interesting when you think about Demeter and mm-hmm. the sisters and, mm-hmm. and potentially that being someone that you're in a relationship with or mm-hmm. a brother sister with.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just my brothers were Monk and McCavity, and I was the youngest, and McCavity just kind of went awry and, went off on his own and kind of defied the tribe and his father and was, you know, working his revenge and basically raising hell within the tribe.
So now let's move to the one that has all the fan fiction about it, but Mr. Mistopheles. What was your backstory?
Okay. Well, that? I mean, it's interesting because
there's a lot of backstories written out there for you.
There is. And coincidentally, Ricky Ubeda, who was the original Mistopheles in our production, we were buddies. We did On the Town on Broadway together, and we decorated our room and all that, you know, the artwork, the erotic cat artwork. Yeah. Oh yeah. So we called it Tugophiles. That was our name for it. Because I didn't, until I heard your podcast saying Tugstopheles, I was like, oh, I always thought it was Tugophiles, or that's what we called it. But we decorated.
There's no right answer or wrong answer here.
There it is. Our room was decorated, and a lot of that Tugophiles, like erotic art that we framed, and that was just kind of, like, we went with it because it's awesome. It's out there in these stories and this fan fiction, and really kind of for us and for me, like, Tugger is a very, he just likes love and he likes anything. And Misto is his boy and also his boy in every sense of the word. So, but ultimately they were best friends. And that was something that Ricky and I, he is one of my dearest friends. He's such a great guy. And we just had the best time. And I think it translated on stage because we just like making each other laugh to this day. Like, he's one of my favorite people. And the guy who played Misto for the last half of it, Zachary Downer, equally as fun, totally different, super talented, but like game to just play. And that's so much of Cats, why it's so much fun to do, is because you just get to play around so much. And so you have to say yes, and you have to just dive into the world. And that's why I love doing it.
That's awesome. You know, there's a bunch of fan art Instagram accounts that are probably thrilled to know that you hung stuff up.
Yeah, I think, well, on that, we did a Broadway.com vlog. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. And somebody reached out to me on one of the social media platforms because a lot of the footage, it's me, it's Ricky and myself in our dressing room, and they saw their artwork up. Cause we, like, you know, it was awesome. I mean, we really ran with it, and the fans really embraced that vlog that we did. And, we just embraced the fans because that's why this show is the success that it is.
So I've got one more family tree question before we get into the two rumors that I need you to debunk for the world. Do you think Grisabella is your mom, or no. What is the relationship in that?
Well, for me, I didn't go in that direction with Grisabella. Okay. I went in the direction that this is a long story. Basically, as a kitten, Grisabella was active in the tribe, and I very much idol worshipped her and had a crush on her and whatever. And Jelly Lorem and I were like little kitten friends because Sarah Ford Sarah Ford and myself, we built our show around each other, which was really fun because, like I said, we just like to laugh. And then essentially Grizabella is the person, not the person, the cat that turned Tugger into Tugger, because Grizabella deflowered Tugger and then broke his heart and then went off with McCavity and like killed the last ounce of his kitten. So between that and then Tugger had, Tugger's owner was a girl that, this is all my story.
This is your story. Is this written out in the fan fiction? Because it sounds like it.
Oh, no, this is written out in like my Tugger journal because I'm a total nerd and I write out like character biographies and everything. And so I'd be sitting on like top of the car during tech when they were teching Bustopher Jones, just writing out the story because it's just stuff for me that I have to know. But my owner was a little girl that was very much like Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka, just a little brat who would just dress me up like that. And I was just a pampered kitten that she played dress up with. So I was a punk, partially because of her, partially because of being screwed over by Grizabella, and partially because like I could get away with it because I was Deuteronomy's son and nobody's going to do anything. And so I'm just like, all right, this is my world.
That's almost a better story. Why don't we go with that for the musical?
Great.
Centered around you.
Perfect.
That's around Tugger.
Tugger presents Cats.
Okay, let's get into the two rumors.
Okay.
The one that I want to read, so it's word for word, but it says there is speculation among both actors and fans of the 2016 Broadway revival that there is some sort of rocky relationship between Tugger and Skimbleshanks, often one that changes every night, heated enemies, good friends, or lovers. What do you have to say? Is it true?
It is true.
True.
Okay, so Jeremy Davis, who was the original Skim. Great guy. Also, in my opinion, was the hottest cat. Once he got hit the makeup on, I was like, you win. You are the hottest cat, hands down. So Jeremy Davis, that's for you. Anyway, so Jeremy and I had worked together a couple years before on a film, and we reunited in this show, and we just had a great time. And the way that there are the cats that are pro-Tugger and against Tugger, and Skimbleshanks is very much against Tugger. Well, how the whole Tuggershanks, that's what the fans called it, Tuggershanks.
All right.
Tuggershanks came about, I believe. We had the best fans during the revival, and there was a group of them that would come to the show all the time, and each one of them identified with a different cat. And I believe it was, I feel like the Tuggershanks thing came about because the one that identified with Skimbleshanks and the one that I identified with Tugger, I don't know, planted a seed with one of us being like, maybe Jeremy and I did something on stage one night during, what number was it during? I think it might have been during the ball. I feel like it was in Act Two. There was something. There was always an interaction that it's, I think one night they saw something and so then they kind of planted the seed. Well, me being like, just game to try whatever. I was like, all right, so Jeremy and I are going to play this up one night. We just ended up playing different scenarios every night. It started off as something fun just to like entertain more of the audience who's really, really looking for something like that. But then we ultimately just, it became something for us. I really wish I could remember exactly what moment it was. But it was definitely in there, and we played it up or didn't play it up, you know?
Yeah. How long did that go?
I think it started, Jeremy left to go do Frozen. He was there for the first year, I think. And it started about halfway, maybe about three or four months into the run. And it went all the way until he left.
Wow.
Because it was just fun. I mean, like that was just it. You would find these different moments with different actors on stage, and if they were game, then it became part of your show. And that's the beauty of Cats. You can just adjust it accordingly every night. And that was why I remained with the show so much, because it always kept it fresh. And some nights I'd feel this way about someone, the next night I would totally not, and because that's how cats are. They're bipolar. They're all over the place.
So do those super fans know that you kind of did this because of their...
I think so. I think so.
They're in on it?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're probably listening right now, and they're hopefully having a chuckle about that, because I think they definitely know.
As they're drawing,
I hope.
Tugophiles to send to you now.
Or Tuggershanks, man.
Tuggershanks.
That was where it started off, Tugophiles, and then it ended up Tuggershanks by the end of the run.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Do you have any other heated battles with anybody else?
Let me think. No, I think I pretty much kept it like my love interests in that show were On Ballerina, Skimble, and Misto. I remember at one point fans getting really mad because Kim Foray, who was the first to meet her, her and I are good friends, and she posted a photo of her and I in character, and she wrote like Demeter loves Tugger, and the fans like came for her.
Not allowed.
Like, no, absolutely not. That is Monk's girl, and she was just like, this is nuts, and I was like, well, there it is.
I always thought she was in an abusive relationship with McCavity.
Oh, she is. She totally is.
Okay.
I mean, that guy, like, you've got her that's like, you know, dealing with trauma, and then you've got Bomb Ballerina who like got off on it. Like, you've got the two extremes of like abuse right there.
Yeah, it's by far become one of my favorite songs.
I agree. It's my favorite song, and it's the when we did the Sitz Pro for the show. That was the most exciting part with the orchestra and those girls just like melting their faces off, and especially with like Kim and Christine, who are just so freaking talented. Just it was in that room, just hearing it all come to life. It was thrilling.
Yeah, your song and that song created furries. There are multiple people who are now furries because of watching those two songs.
Great, I will take credit for both.
Yeah. So not the furry, but different segue here.
Too late. I already took credit. It's all mine.
With McCavity being a great song, who would you say, if you weren't Tugger, would you either want to play, or who is your favorite cat and then least favorite cat? Not actors, just characters,
totally.
Stories.
It's interesting. I don't know who I would. I think if I ever revisited this show, the only cat that I would want to play is Gus. I love Gus. I remember Christopher Gurr, who just gave a masterclass every night. Him and Sarah Jean Ford and Sarah Jane Shanks, who came in after Sarah Ford left. It was just such a beautiful moment. I remember the first time that Sarah Ford and Gurr did the. It was like the last number that they blocked during rehearsals, and then we were in New 42. And I'm sitting on top of the wood oven because they had a mock set and they did the song for the first time. And literally, like, you look around the room and we're all like perched as cats, like just like crying. And Andy Blankenbuehler's looking at us like, what the hell is this? Because it was just so beautiful. And it was just the two of them were just magic together. And so was Sarah Jane with Gurr. But Gus, my favorite.
Can I cut you off real quick? Because I think it's a weird choice to make that the first thing like out of intermission.
Yeah.
Because it's such a powerful, emotional song, and it's like people coming back from mm-hmm. getting candy.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I don't know where else it would go necessarily in the show, unless because it's like you have to end act one with the ball, and then you have the intermission where you've got Deuteronomy on stage being mobbed by the audience.
Selfies everywhere.
Yeah, which was just nuts. And up in our warm-up space, they had a TV which was doing a live feed. So we would watch it, and it looked like just a zombie apocalypse, like crawling up all over him. It was crazy. And then right after that, he scolds us, Deuteronomy, in the moments of happiness, because it's just like, you are bad kittens for treating Grisabella like that. And then it goes into Gus. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a slow burn, I guess. But it just seems like that would be the only place, because there are like two ballads in the show and that's it.
I think you're overvaluing how much thought went into the order of the story. There's not a lot of story here.
I know, but see, that's my job as an actor, to like thread a through line. And for me, like that whole show, it was full. Like I had every moment of like, you might not have known, but for me, I went on a ride every night.
So let's talk about the movie.
Okay.
Either the first version or the updated one, whichever one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you see it? What did
I saw, yeah, I saw the updated one the day after Christmas, and I was really, really excited to see it, because I know when the first trailer came out, and there was this huge uproar about it, and my take on it was, it's exactly what I thought it would be. It's a weird show, so it's going to be a weird movie. And they already filmed the Broadway production back in 98 for PBS. So if they weren't going to switch it up, then why do it? And they did. They switched it up. It's not the Broadway show. And there were some choices in it that I really, really liked. I thought the dancing was great. I would have liked to have seen more of the dancing, but I had a lot of friends in it, and I thought what they were doing was great. And I know how hard they all worked on that movie, because I know how hard we worked on the show. And people, the thing that was weird for us bringing it back to our revival was, we worked, it was such a hard show to do, and I feel like a lot of people just like had so many negative feelings towards the show and towards us, because they just don't like the show Cats, and so they were just wanting it to fail. Not everybody, but it's just something, it's a stigma that's attached to the show. You either love it or you hate it. It's very polarizing. So I think with the film, like, it had everything going against it before a trailer was even released. Mm-hmm. People were wanting to watch it fail before they saw anything. So the minute that the trailer came out, and it's a weird movie, it should be, it's exactly what I thought it would be. And then people were just like, just wanting it to fail. And is it a perfect film? No, but it has a lot of really great things about it. And I'm glad that they did that there is a different take on the show, because there needed to be a different take with it. Mm-hmm. Because they already filmed the Broadway show.
Yeah.
And so they tried some new things, and some of them worked and some of them didn't work as well as I'm sure they hoped. But like, I had a good time. And like, I thought the cast, they did a good job.
Yeah. So we went into a lot of detail the day after the show. I saw it with Alan Seals from the Theater Podcast with Alan Seals. And
love that show.
Great show. And so I covered a lot of this. I think the stuff that, like, I agree with you. I thought the dancing was phenomenal. I thought it was really weirdly cut to not make you able to see a lot of it,
especially
with the talent that they had doing those numbers. The only things that like really still bother me looking back multiple weeks later is what they did with Mr. Mistopheles. I did not like that character being kind of nerdy and quiet and unsure of himself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a confident character normally. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a big fan of that decision. The ending just blew my mind when Judy Dench just speaks to you over and over
again. I can see that.
Those are the only two things. Like, I thought the acting was great. I thought there were numbers that were really, really well done. I think it's, like you said, very overblown, because a lot of people are rooting for it to fail. And it's kind of a running joke now of like, it's an easy punchline for a lot of things.
Of course. And that's where that's just what Cats is, unfortunately. I mean, but the thing is, like, it's definitely, and I, you know, there are things, my favorite part of the movie, I will say, this is going back on the Tugger Shanks thing, was Skimble Shanks. I thought that number, and I thought that actor, I loved. I loved it. I was like, I feel like they took Misto's dancing away from Misto and then gave it to Skimbleshanks. Yeah. Like they gave him like the dance number because Misto in the movie, not trying to like spoil anything, but like isn't
it's
the
been
dancer.
Around for 40 years. Yeah. You can't spoil anything.
Well, that's true. I mean, just yeah. Singing and dancing cats, that's all it is. But not in the movie, with Misto at least. They made him not the dancer that he is in the show. And so they just kind of switched it over to Skimbleshanks, and he got that moment.
Okay, so I'm not going to let you off the hook. I still want to hear your least favorite cat. Oh. And then I do have another rumor still.
Okay, let's keep going with the rumors. Least favorite cat. And it's not anything with the actors. Like I said, I liked the actors. But I think my least favorite cat was probably Syllabub.
Okay.
Yeah. But I just always, I think it was just more, I don't know. For some reason I found that character, I just didn't really, I don't know. I would just pick Syllabub.
No one said Peter, and that's the answer.
But here's the thing that's fascinating to me, because you have this disdain for Peter, but
just
there's
also, they named him Peter.
But what about Victor or Bill Bailey?
I don't know. Something What's, about Peter.
But
just,
Peter, it's
something
like,
about just Peter being in the naming of the cats. Because it's not, they're not, the rest of them, like Victor's not even, it's Peter. It's a saint.
Okay. I was going more with like male genitalia, but yeah, like St. Peter, there you go.
I was just thinking it's like, it is the one of the most common names, not in a bad way, but it's just a very common traditional name in a show that has very few other of those.
Fair enough.
That's why.
No, fair enough. Right. Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the other rumor that, and this was buried deep in YouTube comments.
Okay.
So I have no idea if there's any truth to this.
All right.
But it does involve you.
Okay.
And someone said that they went to see the revival in 2016, and that at one point there was a lady in the first couple rows in a Rum Tug Tugger costume, and you got off stage and went and took her seat and made her get up.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Is that
no,
true?
I did. I forgot that. Oh, my God. Okay. So there is a moment. I totally forgot that. There is a moment in the show, in the revival. I know in the original show, too, Tugger would go out to the audience.
And make kids cry.
Yeah.
That's what Sarah said. She just made children cry.
Yeah. Well, it was like in Green. before, I want to get back on Green Eyes because I have a funny story about that. But let me finish this story. With our show, Tugger would go out, and then they had this giant like camera, and you would take a selfie with the audience, and then there was this Instagram account that would upload the photos every night. So there was, and we had a fun time with that. Like I would be like, all right, give me a theme. I would ask different cast members, like, what would the theme be for this night or that night? And so if you really looked at the photos, it'd be a guessing game of like the theme, or with Sarah Jenkins, who was Jenny Anydots, we had a whole storyline going through with the photos that would go on for a couple of weeks of like a relationship that you'd really have to dissect and see. But we knew what was up. But there was somebody dressed up as Tugger, I remember. And I did. I think I sat down. I made that person get up and do something in the audience as Tugger while I sat there as an audience member and watched. And they were dressed as, for some reason, I feel like they were dressed as somebody else, but obviously it would have been Tugger because I wouldn't have.
To be fair, this is an audience that's recounting it on YouTube in the comments.
It's probably more factual.
Could be anybody.
There were so many things that like we did during that photo moment. Like, I mean, it was just, as an audience member, you had to say yes. And there are people that would be totally game. And then there would be people that would just not want to be in the photo. And it would just kind of be like a lesson in like reading people's body language. I remember there was one kid who had like some M&Ms, and I started eating his M&Ms, and he got pissed.
Why you don't bring children to the show?
Yeah. But see, the thing was, and this is the other story I want to talk about, and Green Eyes at the top of the show, which I find terrifying. I think Green Eyes is so scary. And I loved it because I would love to scare people, as would Sarah. And we would just creep up behind people in the pitch black and then flash the green eyes in their face and they'd freak out. And it was always the adults that got more scared than the children. The adults were more terrified than the kids were. But I remember one time, and God got me because I loved scaring people. And one time during Green Eyes, I went down and I scared this little girl and she punched me in the face. Like her, like in her reflexes were just like, she punched me in the face And Jennifer Rogers, our stage manager, because on the monitor, you could see out into the audience. It was in like night vision and she saw it and was laughing because like it was bound to happen yeah. over a year and a half because I just, you know, like scared people. That little girl clocked me and it was hilarious.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I do have one final question. Before that, though, I want to know, what are you working on currently? Where can we see you?
Right now, I am just, I just finished choreographing Kristen Chenoweth's most recent Broadway show. And now I am back to the grind of being an actor. I've got a couple of concert gigs coming up, all this blah, 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 boring stuff. But yeah, a couple things in the works. But at this current moment, I am talking to you.
Amazing. Okay, my final question. And you know it's coming. I have spent the entire podcast saying that Grizabel was the wrong cat to die. So do you agree with me? Or if you disagree with me, well, I guess if you agree with me, who do you think should have died at the end? And if you disagree with me, why should Grizabel have died?
I think Gus should have died. Like, I think Gus was on his last leg. And, like, Grizabella, like, I mean, listen, like, she gets that moment. But, like, I think the twist would have been Gus to, like, because the thing that I say with cats is, like, cats is, like, American Idol for felines. Like, everyone's just, like, pick me, pick me. My character was not like that. He was just there to, like, have a party and, like, party. Like, he doesn't want to go. He's got more life to live. And Grizabella, it's, you know, maybe I sound like a jerk, but for me, I was always like, wait, why is Gus not going? Like, he just had this moment, and maybe he goes after this and crawls off and dies. But if he's going to crawl off and die, you might as well, like, just let him go on that last ride flying through the sky to the Heaviside lair. You know, like Grizabella's got a couple more like diseases to catch. Like, let her do her thing.
She's got more rehab to go through.
Yeah,
right?
Come on. Like, she needs to like, you know, she needs to take life's, you know, negative things and turn into something positive.
I
and stop being a victim.
Completely.
I'm gonna have so many fans come for me right now. They're gonna come for me because I've come for Grizabella, and that's not a reflection on Mamie or Leona. It's just. Why do we feel so sorry for Grizabella? What about Gus? Justice for Gus.
For sure. What about Tuxtophiles? Or what's your version?
Tuxtophiles. Oh, there's still no stop. There's never a stop.
I think
you should
go together like Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, we should. We probably will. It's got to be something epic. Something epic.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This
How can
fun.
We find you on social media so everyone can comment and send you that
hate mail and or some new
or
like,
some new
like
fan
erotic
art.
Fan art.
New
like,
fan
come
art.
Come on, Tugger Shanks. I'm at the Tyler Haynes.
Amazing. Well, thanks for listening to this bonus episode with Tyler Haynes on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, TheWrongCatDied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.